Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Lawrence Diggs has traveled across every continent except Antarctica. He has written and published 5 books. He is a poet and a seeker. He is the founder of the International Vinegar Museum in South Dakota. But he joins us today to talk about a new poetry collection. It's called Pros and Cons, Poetic Views from Inmates Detained by the South Dakota Department of Corrections. Lawrence Diggs, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Oh, thank you very much.
Tell me the story behind this book's creation. How did it come to be?
Well, some time ago, I had done a presentation on the similarities between Buddhism and Christianity for some nuns, and they were connected to the prison because one of their nuns was working very closely with inmates, and somehow some inmates who were interested in Buddhism, got involved in this conversation about, the similarities and asked if I would do that presentation in the prison, and I agreed. And then after that, they asked the administration if they would ask me to be their pink tech, which is the volunteer that works closely with their group. And after going to visit them, and seeing what they wanted to do, and also checking with my bishop, I asked, for guidance about that, and it was decided that I wouldn't teach them things like meditation, because even though I do meditation, I'm not trained to train other people in meditation, but I would go in as a kind of a mechanic to help them to see things that they didn't see, to be a kind of guidance for them. So on that basis, I started working with them, and it occurred to me that one of the problems with inmates in general was a difficulty in communicating their needs verbally. Also, I wanted, one of the kind of tenets in Buddhism is we're not a proselytizing group. Rather, we just do what we needed, be good Buddhists, and that is about as much proselytizing as we want to do. So we decided that whatever we did for ourselves, we would open it up to the whole prison population. So we wouldn't do, quote, Buddhist things only, even though they have, like, meditation sessions, and they do have we call Dharma talks, or times when they talk about Buddhism and the precepts. We invite monks who do the meditation training, and they come from Minneapolis. They're in a different tradition than mine, but, meditation is kind of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work with, and they do that part. So out of the communication part came, it was like, well, how do we do this? How do we improve the communication? And one idea that came up in conversation was having a poetry group. So we started inviting people, putting up posters in the prison that say, okay, we're going to have this poetry group. And surprisingly, there was a surprising number of people. We started out, I think we had 14, 20 or so, depending on the day. And then it just kind of grew. And one of the things I stress to people that I teach poetry to, because I'm on the South Dakota State Poetry Society's board of directors, and in that capacity, and in also a capacity as an artist in residence, I teach poetry to also other groups too, including the schools. But I like to think that when a person writes a poem, that they, if they do the best they can at that poem, then it, they should try to make it on a level that they feel is publishable by someone who is a publisher. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I tried to get them to improve their poetry, and when they got to the point where they thought, yeah, this is publishable, then I said, okay, well, let's publish a book then. And so the result is this Pros and Cons.
Tell me about the value. Why is that important to you to teach, that you should work on it until it is publishable?
Well, a lot of times when people try to do any kind of writing, and quite frankly, many other things, and they take a class, they can easily get dumbed down to, I'm just a student. And I think, well, that's a kind of a, almost like a, an admission of defeat, you know. Every person who's doing any kind of art or anything, I think, that's serious realizes that we're on a journey. We're not, we don't ever get there. We just are on this journey to discover new things. So, you know, my criteria when I talk to them about their criteria is, look, we don't, you know, there are no grammar or spelling Nazis here, and so we don't really have to worry about that so much. That's one of the reasons we have this thing called poetic license. But what we have to be always aware of is, did we communicate anything? If you're not communicating, if the purpose is not to communicate to another person, then there's no reason for you to write a poem. You already know what you want to say. But if you're trying to write something that you want to communicate or clarify to yourself, then it should be really clear to yourself. And since we're all connected as human beings, somebody out there will probably get something from it. But the criteria is, are you, do you understand it? Does someone else understand it? If you, if that is the case, then it's publishable, because there's somebody out there who wants to have their issue or something reflected, and you're doing that as a poet and as a published poet.
On this journey to discover new things, what sort of things did these poets discover?
Well, what was very interesting was they discovered that their vocabulary or limit of vocabulary was limiting what they wanted to say. They often had things and feelings and experiences that they wanted to transmit and translate to others, but they lacked the vocabulary to do it. So it was useful to try bring that to the group, try as best you could wherever you were, to work it out the best you could, and then bring it to the group, and then people would help them to find another way to express that thing, or introduce them to a new word or a different style. So that was one big discovery. Another one was we had different styles, and one of the first things I did was to try to introduce the idea that, look, poetry has many fashions and many styles, and you can invent your own style. Other people invented those styles, so why are they the only ones that can create? You can do it too. And in the process of doing that, people, one, discovered that they had a voice. And I had one young man, for example, he was trying to write everything in hip-hop, kind of hip-hop style, because that's what he grew up with. That was what his peers did. But in the process of having a discovery about not only his writing but his presentation, he discovered his own voice, and that he did not have to be limited to what his what was popular among his peers. When he did that, he had the experience of the other inmates saying, man, that's now that is good poetry. The other stuff you were struggling with, now we get what you're trying to say, because you're saying it in your voice.
Did the things that they were seeking originally from the Buddhist tradition turn out to be things they were also seeking from the poetry tradition?
I would say yes, because Buddhism isn't, you know, sometimes people even question whether it's really a religion. We don't, you know, we don't approach things in kind of the same way, and with dogma and things like that, and having things try to bang it into a Buddhist box. In fact, one of the earliest things that the Buddha said was, hey, these are some ideas that I had. Try it. If it doesn't work, don't do it. And that's my approach, too, you know. I can introduce you to experiences that I've had. I can introduce you to experiences that others have had, and other ways of looking at things. But these are just experiences, and these are just ideas. If it works for you, try it. If you like, you know, and if it works, use it. If it doesn't work, it's not for you, you know. So in that sense, I think that the, you know, that Buddhism, or at least what we're trying to do, or what I'm trying to do within that, within the institution, is to get people to really come up with, well, why are you doing what you're doing, and does it work? You know, and what are your objectives? Are those objective things that you think working for you? Look at the bigger picture. Let's dissect it a little bit and see, you know, here's some things. Go try this, and when the next time I come, give me feedback and tell me if it worked for you or not.
Every time we talk about inmates, we're also probably talking about victims. Do you work with victims of crime to do the same? Would there be value in working with victims of crime with poetry and teaching poetry?
Well, I think that there would be, because I think, you know, one of the things when we talk about crime, we often talk about victims and perpetrators. And what we don't realize, and what is very clear to us in the Buddhist tradition, is when those people interact, they have a dance, and now they have a history, and they're joined together no matter what they would like and no matter how they feel about each other. They are now one. There's a soft intersection between them that was developed by whatever conflict or whatever transpired between them. That thing bonds them inevitably. So healing one is healing the other. And so in that sense, you know, I have not done that, but I would be open to doing that if there was some use to it.
Tell me about how to get the book, and the proceeds of it have an interesting destination. Let's cover that.
Well, what happened is, after we decided to do this book, we realized, okay, this is going to be a compilation of material. So, you know, how are we going to divide the profits? And so what I just kind of let them stew with it for a while. And then what developed was, okay, well, then it's clearly going to be too complicated to, like, divide up the profits. Why don't we all agree to give it away, you know, since, you know, we should really be. And it was the inmates who came up with, we should be thinking about ways that we should give back instead of just trying to get something for us, because it's not going to do us very much good in here anyway. So when they looked around to think about, well, who should we give it to? Well, the name that came up immediately and consistently was Family Connection, which is a group of people or an organization that helps the inmates by providing a place for their loved ones to stay when they come, and so they don't have to pay an expensive hotel bill, which would just sort of, since most of the people who go to prison are poor, then their families are poor, they can't afford that, so they would not see their families. And also trying to do things to keep the inmates connected with their children where that's appropriate. And so that the inmates wanted the money to go to them.
Lawrence, we're going to put a link up on our website after the show for how to get the book. We've got just 1 minute left. Can you tell me in that minute how you help teach someone to see things that they don't already see? That was one of the first things you said, and I'm wondering if you could follow up on that very briefly.
Yes. What I do is I ask them questions and help them to try to relook at what they think that they think. So that's basically, they discover it. I don't really tell them anything. they know it. It's just that the right questions have to be asked, not the answers given. So I'm more interested in questions than answers.
I am more interested in questions than answers, too. We always have one more question to ask, don't we?
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Lawrence Diggs. The book is called Pros and Cons. It's available through Family Connection and some online sources as well. We'll put links up to that after the program. Lawrence Diggs, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.